Left hand red, right foot green, you're hired. New phone, who dis? For real. Eeny, meeny, miny, MSP. These stories and much more on today's episode of MSP Dispatch.
This episode is presented by the Salty Soul Foundation. Since 2017, Salty Soul has removed over 20,000 pounds of trash in Florida and California. Visit saltysoulfoundation.org to support this organization via direct donation or purchase of their merchandise.
Good morning and welcome to the September 9th, 2022 episode of MSP Dispatch, your source for news, community events, and commentary in the MSP channel. I'm Ray Orsini, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Tony Francisco. How you doing, Tony?
Awesome. Apple event happened. Who's not happy at this point? That's all I have to say. Just, I'm good. I'm like, you and your 15 Apple books that you purchased because you're not an Apple fanboy.
Tony is in Christmas mode. He is so happy. I can only imagine he'll be pre-ordering and waiting at midnight. But we'll talk about that in his story. For now, MSP Dispatch family is very sad to announce Queen Elizabeth II has passed away at the age of 96. We are recording this on September 8th for broadcast on September 9th. She passed away at the age of 96. For reference, and we understand this is not a typical MSP story. However, due to the world impact she's had and the number of people, including our own families, that are affected by this news, we felt it was important to share with the audience some interesting statistics. She ruled for 33% of the U.S. existence, and she lived longer than 16 U.S. presidents. And one thing that is interesting for MSPs is the British government's actually had plans to prepare for her death for the last 56 years. This video that we'll link in the show notes talks about how they had the passphrase, London Bridge is down. They had a phrase name for her, Mrs. Robinson, how they communicated, how they had planned to communicate that to all the news networks via colored light bulbs. Very, very interesting. It's a quick 6-7 minute watch, but definitely interesting. And again, link will be in the show notes below. On the lighter side of news, Tony, we've talked about AI-generated art, right? We talked about DALL-E before. However, there's this new one. I don't know if it's new. It's new to me. Have you heard of Midjourney?
Midjourney? No, I have not.
So I'm sure you've heard of this. At the a young man by the name of Jason Allen won first place at the Colorado State Fair Fine Arts Competition with his Théâtre d'Opéra Spatial. It was a $300 first prize, huge event, you know, Colorado State Fair. I'm sure Tony was dying to attend. Only problem with it is it was actually generated by this AI. So the other contestants were complaining that it was plagiarism. It's an absolutely phenomenal piece of work. You think that's first prize worthy, Tony? I mean, would you think that was AI that generated that?
I am confused. So you're telling me that he submitted artwork that was generated by a computer?
That's right. That artwork right there kind of looks like a Doctor Strange little circle thing. It is beautiful, though. It's absolutely beautiful. Link will be in the show notes.
Yeah.
Our own graphics designer, Juan, thought to make an AI-generated MSP Dispatch graphic, using the same Midjourney AI. And this is actually what it came up with. I'm actually impressed. What about you?
This is amazing. Now, and of course, our brains, by definition, are a type of computer that is, of course, driven by and supported by organic matter. But just another type of computer doing the same thing. It's kind of it's kind of like AMD versus Intel.
I'm going to go ahead and say badass. You know, this is
unreal. Like, this is unreal. This is next level stuff. And if we're at the beginning phases of this, what do you think this is going to turn into eventually? I mean, are computers going to do all of the music, all of the art? What is this going to evolve into?
I'll put a call out. If you're watching this, whenever you watch this, go over to Midjourney or your favorite AI graphic creator and put some stuff and link it to us. Please keep it PG. But go ahead and link it to us, and maybe we'll throw some MMN swag over, you know, like this awesome coffee cup. We'll throw it over your way for the best one, or one or two. But what do you say we get into the news, Tony?
Dude, let's get into the news, man.
In our top business story, our prospective employer is asking too much of their candidates. As reported by Braden Bahia on daily.com, job hunting is already challenging in itself, and many job hunters claim the interview process these days has become more than exhausting. In an article by BBC called The Rise of Never-Ending Job Interviews, they documented numerous experiences of job seekers who had to go through multiple interviews, talking about how at every stage they were uncertain if they would get the job or how many more rounds of interviews they had to do. One example was a TikToker user, Trina, who stirred up netizens in a video where she said that after completing two rounds of two-hour interviews, the company asked her to return and do another three 90-minute, that's 90-minute interviews. She said the third interview was initially pitched as a panel interview before learning that she would be interviewed by the three panel members individually. In the video's caption, she wrote how crazy the hoops are that companies make applicants jump through. Just as a side note, Trina did get the job. Tony, I'm all about interviewing candidates, finding out if they're the right fit, multiple phases of interviews. But this is hours and hours and hours, several days of this woman's life for a job. That seems excessive to me.
The first thing I do when I interview people is I hand them a Rubik's Cube and say, do this, and you got 20 seconds, go. and you got to do it underwater. So there's a couple of things that I would like to point out from the interview process. I've interviewed hundreds and hundreds. I want to say thousands, but not thousands. I've interviewed so many people, and the process is extraordinarily predictable. The one thing that you want to ask them, you can't ask them. In fact, legally, you can't ask them, but it's almost difficult to articulate, which is, what are you capable of? When do you break? And what is it going to take to break you? So handing them an impossible question is great. You want to see how they can act in a kind of a diverse situation. One of the famous tactics that I've used, when this is for hiring an in-house counsel for legal reasons, in-house counsel for my company, is I said, write me up a contract. This is done at Google, by the way, so I'm totally plagiarizing with pride, was to write up a contract, an agreement between me and the devil selling my soul and how I can get it back. Write it up. I want it now. The odds of an attorney right now writing that up at some point in their history of employment or experience, 0%. But that's what I want to know.
Your point. You want to make sure they're not pulling on past experience. You want to make sure they're being creative. Yeah.
How can they evolve? How quickly can they evolve? What does it take for them to say, I just can't do this? I just can't do the Rubik's Cube. I get one side lined up and everything else messes up on the other side. When do they break, or can they evolve very quickly? And I love that concept, but three-hour interviews? Now you run into what I consider to be a true problem. They've over-engineered the process. They've made it it's almost a toxic work environment at that point if they're going through that many layers of, let me make sure I'm making the right choice.
No, I'm with you 100%. I get it. We do multi-phase interviews. I always have. I'm a big fan of that. We always have two people in the room at least. And the first interview is just getting to know and qualifying the things that were on their resume, how much is BS and how much is factual. Second round, we have them talk with the people they're actually going to work with to, determine, how they mesh and, how they play off each other and what questions they might have. And then the final interview, and these are 15 to 30 minute interviews. These are quick. And then the final interview, just go over bases and negotiation and, hammering it out. I completely get skills testing. I completely get seeing how they do critical thinking or how they would be applicable to the job, and I get that's challenging, but these are human beings where you're not their only application. They have other jobs they're applying to. They're either taking off of work to go do your interview, or they're not working and they need, they have multiple applications or job interviews they have to go to. As employers, that to me, I've always said, the employer is interviewing the employee is interviewing the employer as much as the other way around. That's a red flag to me. I'm glad Trina got the job. I don't know if she accepted it or not. But to me, that kind of employer is a little out of touch with the needs of the MSP audience or the needs of their audience, whoever they're interviewing. There's no inclination that this was an MSP. So, but we want to hear from you. If you've been through hellacious interviews, or what is your interview process? Or if you're on the employee side, if you've been through a good round of interviews and you thought something actually was great, let's share the information and get better for it. But in our next story, Tony's been shaking in his seat, dying to talk about this. I'm not even going to lead it in. Tony, just take it away, man.
Unleash me. We're talking about the Apple event, and it was good. They obviously talked about the new iPhone 14 series, the new Apple Watch, the new Apple AirPod Pro 2, which is pretty nice. But one thing that was mentioned was incredibly important, and it was very subtle. As mentioned in ZDNet.com, the iPhone 14 drops the SIM card slot. But what does that mean? The SIM card, the subscriber identity module, involves the individuality or the unique subscriber associated to the phone. There's no more SIM tray. There's no more SIM card to put in said no more SIM tray. The iPhone 14 and iPhone 14 Pro models will arrive ready to activate the eSIM, the electronic SIM. Note that these models cannot activate with a physical SIM because, again, there is no more SIM tray. One hitch is that while many carriers in the US around the world do support eSIM provisioning, not all of them do. And only some of them support eSIM quick transfer to switch to other carriers. It's likely that Android phone manufacturers will opt to do the same. The iPhone 14 can store 6 eSIMs, and the Pro can store up to 8. The ability to use multiple eSIMs is useful for anyone traveling to different countries, but particularly for frequent international travelers, as long as the networks that they're traveling to supports the eSIMs. The question that I have for you, Ray, is, does this mean the end of SIM card cloning? And before we get to that, I want to point out that at the event, I was just up at, I believe, was that, and I can't even remember, Chicago Pizza, and I was with, I can't even mention the name for sanctity of the parties that being, but someone was talking about how her and her husband, every time they spoke, someone would, or FaceTime, someone would answer the call. And I said, oh, your SIM card got cloned. And she said, what do you mean? And I said, your SIM card got cloned. Let me guess, it's only when he calls you. And she said, yeah. And I said, let me guess, you have AT&T. And she says, yes. And I said, never happens when you call him. Yeah, how did you know this? Because Verizon uses what's called the cave algorithm, and I don't want to get involved. I'm just instant narcolepsy for everyone in this conversation. But rest assured, she was jumping up and down when I told her what happened. They got their SIM card replaced, and she can't stop thanking me. It's great. But SIM card cloning is out there. It happens all the time. Does this mean the eSIM, does this mean the end of SIM card cloning? Ray, what are your thoughts?
I'm sorry, Phil. I have no fucking clue. I look at this and we always got to give Phil a little bit of work. I mean, I don't know.
What does that mean? You have to give him work. What does he have to do?
Well, you know, he's got to bleep it when I say I have no fucking clue. No, I mean, the thing is this, I can think of logistical reasons, right? Like, you know, I want to note, while I am an MVNO and while we operate cell services with my phone company, I didn't know what SIM stood for. I was actually thinking that this morning, so I learned something on MSP Dispatch today. I was thinking back, like whenever we order SIMs, whether it's from our own suppliers or like, you know, we used Google Fi with my family and stuff like that, or anywhere else, they'd either ship it to you and it would come a couple days later, or you go to the store and you'd get it. But it's an asinine process. It is cumbersome. It is illogical. It is... You know, and it's frustrating because not all phones' eSIMs are supported on all networks, which is ridiculous. It's data. If you're on the network, if you're on the band, it should work. I'll give an example. These carriers place these ridiculous, completely bogus, completely made up limitations on the device. So my current device is a Samsung S22 Ultra Plus Plus something, whatever. The S21, S22 series, they have the ability internationally for one physical, one eSIM. Same physical device in the US, the S21, on certain carriers is only the physical SIM. The eSIM is locked. T-Mobile allows for the unlocked eSIM. AT&T, Verizon don't. It is ridiculous. To the point where my S21 was bought as an unlocked device. I had it on Google Fi, which was T-Mobile. Google Fi, which was connected to AT&T at the time. And because of that, it locked the eSIM, and I couldn't put my own MVNO eSIM on there. How ridiculous is that? So I'm glad the move to eSIM. I'm glad they're pushing it. It's interesting that they're putting as a feature the number of eSIM slots available. It's a tiny amount of information. And I understand it's in that very sacred, secure storage space, so there's very limited space to begin with to store. So I'm sure that goes into account. As far as the security of it, I don't know. I get where you can come from that you can't SIM jack because it's there, because there's nothing physical to SIM jack, but you don't need anything physical to hijack somebody's SMS. So I don't know. So if you know, let us know in the comments, or hit us up, and we'll try to get some security people to give us some information on it. How's that sound?
That'd be amazing. But you know what? There are some good people to have on those conversations, and I hear the next person that you have on in the next story is amazing.
In our community corner section, we're going to talk with Alex Farling, co-founder and channel chief over at Lifecycle Insights, about clients that may be too small for MSPs, or are they? Alex, thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, Ray. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. And for those that don't know, besides being co-founder of Lifecycle Insights and channel chief, which is we're unbiased, but one of our favorite, QBR, TBR, VCIO planning tools and assessment tools. Alex Farling also has the noted distinction of being an ex-MSP. He sold off his successful MSP that he ran for years and before going into the shady vendor world. So just like myself, ex-MSP.
Recovering MSP. I like that.
There you go. Recovering MSP. And Alex Farling also joins the twice weekly talks at Everything MSP, hosted by Dan Tomaszewski. And in last week's talk, Alex brought up an interesting topic that I thought was very interesting to the wider MSP audience. Alex, can you restate that question for us?
Yeah, I mean, the conversation was around increased regulatory compliance, increased insurance mandates, and just a more dangerous and more complicated MSP environment, right, or technology environment, and whether or not we're at a point where small businesses and very small businesses, 3, 5, maybe even smaller number of users, just get priced out of being able to work with an MSP. And it's a really interesting conversation as to whether or not these folks could even find the help they wanted in their cybersecurity journey.
And this is where it gets interesting. Alex and I are usually the curmudgeons of the group, where we're talking about policy and procedure and very strict on what we will and won't allow. And usually we're on both sides, we're on the same side of the fence. But in this one, we were going back and forth a little bit. So I thought it was an interesting topic to bring over to our MSP media audience. So my thing is, I'm a firm believer in, size limit and floors, right? Minimum seat counts, minimum deal size. That's part of the scalability of the MSP client for the MSP, right? I would argue we can't afford to support a client under a certain threshold. But then you bring in a separate view of, well, how are they going to get this support because they have the same client needs? So, I say
they have the same risk, right?
What's your side?
Yeah. To me, it's about risk, right? Your accountant may be a 4-person office. Your doctor or dentist may be a 4 or 5-person office. They need to secure the data that they own just as badly as the person who's 25 or 100 customers. So the problem that I see is that we are pricing those folks out of the market, and there's got to be a creative solution. I mean, MSPs, technology providers, these are creative human beings. There's got to be a creativity investment that reaches back in and figures out how to support the 54% of the U.S. economy, of the U.S. small businesses that are below 5 employees.
So do you think, so then when it goes to scalability, do you think an MSP that caters to 10, 50, 100 person employee shops, Do you think they can cater to those micro SMBs, or do you think it has to be an MSP focused on that because of the creative needs?
I don't think they can the way they're configured today. And I think that's a problem or an opportunity, right? I think my point around this was that I think there's an opportunity here for the MSP who figures out how to solve this problem to make money, right? To give Dave Sobel another hard time, right? He always says, where it's hard, there's money to be made. And I think this is hard. I don't think this is easy. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of investment to help somebody along the cybersecurity journey. Even if they don't have to be HIPAA compliant or NIST compliant, they still have to be able to get cybersecurity insurance. And that bar gets raised every single day. So I think there's a real opportunity here for somebody to figure out how to solve this problem. I ask the question because I don't know the answer.
And that is a very interesting perspective. And that's exactly what we're going to pose to the MSP audience. Those of you, you know, we talk all the time about, or I talk all the time about seat minimums and this and that, and not every client's a good fit for the MSP. But I know at the exact same time, there's thousands of MSPs out there that have those clients that are being told nonstop, get rid of your clients, they're not profitable. But if you're making them profitable, or you've figured that out, you've gotten that creative solution, like Alex is saying, share it with us. Tell us we're wrong.
I think the problem is that most mature MSPs, the ones who are really ready to handle cybersecurity as the threat that it is today, are also the ones that are being told or are saying, I don't want to take somebody below 1500 a month or 10 users or whatever their math problem is. And it's pretty hard to start your small business when your first bill is IT security and it costs you $1,500, right? I just see that as a huge obstacle to starting a small business today.
And that goes back to, you know, I remember when I first started my first business many, many millennia ago, and I reached out to SMB Alliance, I reached out to SCORE, I reached out to all these resources for SMBs. And to be fair, cybersecurity wasn't the threat it is today, right? We're worried about Melissa virus and, you know, that kind of stuff. But I wonder if there's a component where they're telling you budget for employees, budget for payroll, budget for accounting and legal, if there's a spot where they should say budget for security because you're going to need it.
1,000%.
And so that's the time. I want to hear from you guys in the comments. Hit us up, news@mspmedia.tv, or leave us a voicemail, 833-MSP-Network. We will absolutely put Alex's contact information below, as well as Lifecycle Insights. Go check them out. Alex, thank you so much, man. I appreciate your insight on this.
Always a pleasure, Ray. Thanks.
In our first notable mention, MSPAlert.com talks about the MSSP market, expected to grow to $77 billion by 2030. Allied Market Research finds this. Story by Howard Kass. The global managed security services market generated $22.45 billion in 2020 and is projected to reach $77.01 billion in 2030 for a compound growth rate, CAGR, of 12.8% to 2030. The cloud segment is projected to register the highest CAGR of 16.6% from 2021 to 2030. There's quite a few statistics in this article. Click on the show notes to look at them all. It's impressive. In our next notable mention, SiliconANGLE.com talks about Intercontinental Hotels Group knocked offline following the cyber attack by Duncan Riley. Intercontinental Hotels Group, PLC, the owner of hotel brands such as Holiday Inn, Crowne Plaza, and Regent, has been hit by a cyber attack that resulted in its booking systems being knocked offline. In a statement filed September 6th with the London Stock Exchange, IHG described the issue as its technology systems being subject to, quote, unauthorized activity, resulting in booking channels and other applications being significantly disrupted. IHG stated that it had implemented response plans, notified regulatory authorities, and engaged external specialists to investigate the incident. This is not the first time IHG has been hit by a cyber attack. Some 1,200 hotels in the group were affected by an intrusion in 2016.
In my first notable mention, Microsoft Basic Authentication goes bye-bye. As reported by Microsoft.com, in an effort to better protect data and accounts from the increasing number of attacks, Microsoft will start turning off basic authentication for specific protocols in Exchange Online starting October 1st, 2022. Any client using basic authentication for any affected protocol will be unable to connect, and any app using modern authentication for these protocols will be unaffected. Affected apps also include app passwords, as that is basic authentication. Affected protocols are MAPI, RPC, Offline Address Book, or OAB, Exchange Web Services, POP, IMAP, Exchange, ActiveSync, and Remote PowerShell. No changes will be made for SMTP authentication. Microsoft has stated if you're not ready to make the changes, you can go through the audit process for specific protocols that will extend your access to these basic authentications for a specific protocol until December 31st, 2022. If the basic authentication is canceled for a protocol on the original date, you still have through October 31st to rerun the audit, and then you can allow the specific protocol to continue functioning till September 31st, 2022. In my second notable mention, I wanted to mention our MSP communities. Many of you know that I'm a moderator on RMSP, which is the biggest MSP community on the planet with over 140,000 subscribers and readers. However, there are over 100 MSP communities like the one we were talking with Alex Farling, Everything MSP on Facebook. And there's groups in Facebook, Slack, Discord, forums, tons of other places. We are going to include Jay McBain's list. He does one of these every single year, listing a comprehensive list of 143 MSP communities so you can join the one that's best for you. And if you're on Discord, Slack, or Reddit, come say hi, or Facebook, come say hi to Tony and myself. We'd love to hear from you. Tony, we got some feedback. What are our audience saying?
We do have some great feedback from DiskJosh23. I use RAID for backups. Hopefully you have port 3389 open so you can work at home easily.
I knew I was going to get something stuff for that.
Yes. And all your passwords stored in an Excel document too. Of course, who doesn't have all their passwords stored in Excel in an open drive somewhere? The geek humor is awesome. I love this. And the next comment from Mason Schmidt. Why are all the teddy bears names start with Teddy? Because they're all named after President Teddy Roosevelt, of course. Thank you for the feedback, you guys. We love that.
That is absolutely true, and I think that's an awesome story. Definitely go Google that. We're not going to include that link because we torture our staff way too much. But go Google that. That's actually a pretty cool story, along with Baby Ruth. The Baby Ruth story is pretty awesome, too. And feedback from RMSP, ComputerGuy0-0, also a friend, hey, says, son of a beep. I'll do that one for you, Phil. I got you. Connect Booster is Kaseya. YSync is ConnectWise. What's left? Follow-up reply, is there proof that Connect Booster is Kaseya, not trying to cause beep, but their quality is certainly dipped, like they are a part of Kaseya now, but all of their branding is still CBBNG Holdings. Every time I ask Connect Booster, I get no answer. I know they announced a partnership or interest, but it's all confirmed last, or I'm sure he means not confirmed, last time I dug around to find it. And then Accomplished Tower 39 says, goes into payments, referring to our who's the alternative. Goes into payments, definitely someone to check out. Computer Guy 00 says, do you know if this will work with Manage in the Middle? I don't use Manage, I use Halo PSA and QuickBooks Online. And Gazinta says, not yet. They're working in that direction. As we stated in the original episode, it is not confirmed publicly. That is the best we can tell you right now.
I think I also said, hey, I don't want to start any rumors on that. And I think you corrected me. If memory recalls, we don't know that. I'm like, yeah, I won't start any rumors.
We don't know that. We can only talk about things we have been allowed to confirm publicly. Yes. But something I am allowed to confirm publicly is our next episode of Tech Bar, episode 43, featuring Blaine Yeager and Blake Scott of Uptime VoIP.
Hey, I'm Powerhouse Ray.
And I'm Super Cousin Danny.
And we're your hosts for The Tech Bar.
Join us September 15th as we welcome special guests Blake and Blaine of Uptime VoIP for episode 43 at 6:30 p.m. Eastern on the Tech Bar.
Won't want to miss it.
And in our community events on September 11th through the 13th, an in-person event, DattoCon 22. Washington, D.C. I will be there personally. On September 13th at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the MSP Dispatch presented by the MSP Media Network. On the 13th through the 16th, another in-person event, MSP Summit in Orlando, Florida. On September 15th at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Tech Bar Podcast, episode number 43 with Blaine Yeager and Blake Scott of Uptime VoIP. On the 16th at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, MSP Dispatch weekly wrap-up presented by the MSP Media Network, Ray Orsini, and yours truly. And finally, on the 16th through the 18th, an in-person event, TechCon Unplugged in Chicago, Illinois.
So how'd you like today's show? If you like it, hit that thumbs up button. If you didn't, hit it twice. And like Rich Banky says, go ahead and tell a friend. If you want to hear more, hit the subscribe button on YouTube or your favorite podcatcher. Also, be sure to follow us on social media at MSP Media TV. Have any questions? Email us, news@mspmedia.tv for answers on the next episode, or leave us a voicemail, 833-MSP-Network. Tony, thank you for your commentary and insight for this episode and getting through it with me through all my fumbles. I appreciate it.
You did amazing today. You came on tired. I don't think everyone understands a couple things. Real quick, the very beginning, Ray makes the intro up on off the top of his head, which always makes me laugh in the background when he comes up with. You have amazing staff that's doing the queuing, all the timing. In a lot of cases, Ray's finished an entire day of work and he's literally falling asleep as I am talking. And then he wakes up and snaps into character. It is awesome. Thank you so much, Ray. You guys are all amazing.
I wish I could take all the credit. You know who the real rock stars are, not the amazing staff we have making us look wonderful and beautiful, but the MSP audience that watches this, MSP vendors, MSPs, IT professionals, and anybody else that just loves the nonsense that goes on here. We appreciate you. So thanks for hanging out with us. We'll see you next time. Take care.
Deal.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.
In this segment of Community Corner, I'm bringing noted ex-MSP and... What's your title, Alex? I know it's not CEO, but of course that's all that's in my head right now.
Co-founder and channel chief, whatever you want to call
it. There you go. Thank you, sir.
Chief bottle washer. It doesn't matter to me.
Left hand, right... That's a bad start. All right.
Out of the gate.
I like that. And here's where the crash and burn happens, right here. Okay. Intercontinental Hotels Group, PLC, the owner of the brand... hold on.
Tony, that's all she wrote for the show, man. Thank you for your... I was so close. I was almost out. Tony, thank you for your insight. All right.